every night, but...
Compass or?
Compass.
Having a call.
Okay.
And if Larry and Fred should call. Okay, it is Monday, May the 2nd, 2011. Calling to order the, our quarterly meeting for the City of Ocala Firefighters Retirement Plan. Time is 1:05. Roll call for attendance, Randy Griffin, Astrid Trupakis.
Here.
Jim Williams are the members present, so we have a quorum. Also in attendance is Rick Horn, Dave West, and Hope Mayer, and Alicia Gaeta.
And the markets are up today.
Yay.
Hallelujah. Okay, did everybody get a chance to go through the minutes?
Yep.
Okay, do I hear a meeting to approve the minutes from Monday, February 7th, 2011?
Is there just a minor typo on page one? Under, I think it's a minor typo, under A, approve motion to move 5% of domestic equities to international, second sentence, the lower yielding U.S. government bonds instead of U.S. governments.
He explained that most of the losses came in the lower yielding U.S. governments. Oh, I see. U.S. government bond market?
Yeah, it would be U.S. government bonds. I might actually have left that off when I said it.
Maybe.
We might have been in the government's corporate's mortgages lingo.
Okay, so change that to government bonds.
Okay. With that correction, anything else?
Not for me.
I went through it, I didn't see anything.
Yeah, right on last night. Too.
Okay, so that, did I hear a motion?
I'll make the motion.
Oh, second.
Okay. Motion by Williams, second by Estrada. If there's no opposition to a unanimous approval, seeing and hearing none, the motion carries. At this time, I would like to entertain a motion to accept the minutes from our special meeting on Friday, March 11th, 2011, as printed.
So moved.
Motion by Estrada, second by Jim Williams. Any discussion? Okay, no discussion. If there's no opposition to a unanimous approval, seeing and hearing none, motion carries. Okay. Motion. At this time, I'd like a motion to approve the accounts payable. They should have come to you via email. Here's the...
Oh, that's right, because they were talking about the... Yeah. Okay, I will.
Everybody move.
Okay, motion?
Yep.
Motion.
Second.
Okay, motion by Jim Williams, second by Estrada Jurovnicks. Any opposition to a unanimous approval? Seeing and hearing none, the motion carries. Okay, Street on the March 11th. Who made the motion?
I think I did. March 11th was a Street and then Jim. And then the first one was Jim.
You've pretty much been taking turns.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, today.
I just want to get this done so I...
And
get back to the
you
station and see
travels.
Who's on.
Okay.
next thing on the agenda. It'll be a short meeting today, I think. But next thing on the meeting is the quarterly report, so I shall turn the floor over to Dave.
Okay. I think as everyone recalls, the March quarter was dominated by turmoil in the Middle East, reemergence of sovereign debt concerns in the EU, and then of course we have the both personal and the life and economic tragedy that occurred in Japan. So as a result of that, basically the bond market kind of went sideways and learned about the coupon for the quarter. But meanwhile, we had some positive economic news domestically, which helped to continue to propel equity. So we ended up with net-net, another nice quarter. Let's go in our usual summary fashion on page 2. The dominant driver was the S&P 500, or domestic equities, which were up 5.9. And again, smaller cap continued its run, which you are benefiting from with your small cap index fund exposure. Abroad, foreign stocks did not perform as well, although they had a good quarter. The MSCI EAFE, our developed country foreign stock index, was up 3.4. And then off down to the green, you can see the aggregate bond was up about 0.4%, pretty close to pretty much about the coupon there. So all in, it ended up being a fairly uneventful period market-wise, despite it was a pretty tumultuous period for news.
Okay, I'd just like to touch on that one issue. Small caps did extremely well, or did significantly well. And at one point, we were talking about getting rid of the small caps exposure and just doing the all cap thing.
Oh, okay.
Do we just, I guess, on the back burner, and as long as small caps are doing good, we're not going to entertain that idea?
Actually, we would, let me restate the objective or purpose if I could. We didn't want to exit small cap, or make any suggestion that we would make a permanent exit.
Okay.
From small cap. Rather, what we would be doing, or did in the case of Dalton Griner, we brought in a manager who is all cap in their reach. And Dalton Griner has actually maintained a very significant exposure to small and mid-cap, although they're slowly starting to migrate up, as from their perspective they are starting to see more value in large, particularly in quality. Contrast that to Eaton Vance Large Value, which unfortunately had another tough quarter, primarily due to the fact that they are high quality and fish primarily in that large space. So we still have the exposure, we just have a manager that's handling how much or how little we have in there. And fortunately, since their inception, they've been in the right place. So you still have the index kind of in the middle, which we can keep that.
You mean the middle core?
Yeah, core.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, we're just trying to enhance it on the fringes again.
Okay.
I completely want to be respectful of the board's position with and frustration with active management, and the desire and appreciation of the benefits of indexing. So we're moving on the margin, trying to address that. So we still have exposure and would still continue to have exposure. It's just going to be managed. Does that make sense?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Okay. So let's take a look at the cash flow then on page 14. And we had some rebalancing activity that we had talked about at the last meeting that shows up here. Basically, we had pared back some equity. We finally decided to rebalance. We were pushing the outer bounds of our equity because equities had run so well, so that was obviously a good decision to let that go, but, you know, we hit the boundary, so we had to rebalance. So you can see the equity allocation was reduced there. We also funded the global bond, so if you drop down the total global fixed income, the global bond strategy was funded during the quarter. And we also had the American Realty. This is our first full quarter with American Realty. And of course, we're still in the queue with the UBS. I think we have another capital call coming up in June, about mid-June, with American Realty. So we're slowly, you know, getting that up. But nevertheless, there was activity there, rebalancing activity and moving money around. So basically, we opened or started the quarter, just going across the bottom line there, with $30,850,529. Money flows, you know, within the next line there. Contributions for the period total $593,542, which fortunately were cash flow positive. They were marginally more than the distributions, pensioner distributions, $43,638. Fees would be the manager fees deducted custody level. Expenses would be any line items that hit the custody statement, and that was a total of $5,607. Investment earnings broken down into interest and coupons at $101,048. The appreciation number, again, a nice number there, $1,165,750. So all in as of 3/31, take the snapshot with $32,217,397. So now while we're on that, if you drop your eyes down to page 15, and let's just track the fiscal year-to-date earnings anyway, and you can see the income. You've earned $241,983, and appreciation is just under $3 million at $2,888,000. So add those two, you've earned about $3 million so far this year on a fiscal year-to-date. So far, so good. Good year. So let's turn those to percentages on page 16. And going across the top line there, you can see for the quarter, those dollars meant you earned 4.11%, not too shabby. And fiscal year to date, you're tracking at just under 11%, 10.86%. That means now year over year, we're just shy of 12% at 11.92%. And if you take a look at the relative to the benchmarks so far this year, we're about even. And as far as peer groups go, we're tracking about 43rd. And I thought maybe this meeting would be a good meeting to, we've had a lot of stuff, you know, we've been working on to, you know, get some changes made on the margin. So I thought maybe this meeting, let's just sit back, let me take you through where you stand and why, you know, some of the things have fallen out the way they have relative to the, you know, grand peer group universe out there. So anyway, that's where the plan shakes out on a fiscal year to date. Biggest contribution obviously coming from domestic equity, continuing down there at 18.59%. Dalton, on a fiscal year-to-date, our all-cap value manager, a little bit behind, but all the way over to the right. And since their inception, they're marginally ahead. Remember, we brought them on July 1 of 2010. Eaton Vance, excuse me while I choke on that number.
I was going to say, 99% of the market did better than them. Is that what you're saying?
Yes.
That's correct. 3.07, about half of the benchmark return.
That's terrible.
And, yeah, unfortunately, on a fiscal year-to-date, 13.5 versus 17.68.
Well, we so need to,
Eaton Vance is hurting the portfolio. My concern, go all the way over to the right, I think you must have brought them on just before.
Just before you came on.
We came on. I think that January 1 of 2009 is the correct inception date. Again, with no vested interest in any manager,
just a vested interest in making sure that, that this plan performs as well as it could. Eaton Vance is high quality, which is typically going to be a later cycle performance. Now, you've got Dalton Griner that is not quality restrained or cap constrained. They do pretty well through the full market cycle because of the nature of their strategy, whereas Eaton Vance is historically going to be a later cycle when the larger, higher quality names with slower growth rates, because these are, Eaton Vance is almost what you would call a GARP manager, growth at reasonable price. They only want to buy companies that have earnings growth, like a growth manager would, but they have a, that value orientation that, you know, puts them over in the value camp. So, you know, putting those two things together makes this trailing period a pretty tough headwind for that strategy. So, you know, I think it's a fair question on the table. Let's hop up the page. Let's look at Eaton Vance Energy and hop up to page 29. And here we've tried to plot out their experience only. And if you hop down to the that table on the left side, the bar, footing bars, obviously for the quarter, 3.07, half the benchmark. If unfortunately, if you count with me, the quarterly returns across the bottom, obviously March is one under, December is the second, September is the third, and June is the fourth, and March of 10 is the, that's the sixth consecutive quarter of underperformance. And I know when they hit four, we talked about it. That's one of the flags we have in the policy, but we wanted to, you know, step back, take a look, you know, are there contributing factors in the general marketplace that would, you know, maybe make this excusable? And given the nature of the strategy, we felt, you know, okay. But as this quarter evolved, those factors have become less prominent or less of an issue. So, you know, at this point, you know, I wanted to talk about either bringing a list of managers to review, let's see how this quarter goes with Eaton, or alternatively, and very simply, because we already have the index, the core index fund, which is a wonderful thing. And we already have an all-cap value manager that's done well maneuvering through this. We can move funds and consolidate into the Dalton Griner portfolio and just move to one single value manager.
And the other option would be
Vanguard.
Either Vanguard or Wells Fargo index.
Yeah.
And the Russell one. The index is in the 27th percentile.
Yeah,
and that's better than even, you know, the 52nd, the index. The Russell 3000 is in the 52nd. The, I mean, 27th, 39th, 20th. If you look on page 16,
yep.
Under Eaton Vance, to the right, you see the under Eaton Vance on the left, it says Russell 1000 Value Index. And then to the right in the blue, it gives you their ranking.
Mm-hmm.
One quarter, they're in the 27th percentile. So in other words, what is that, 73% of the managers out there, active managers, underperform. So if we went for an active manager, we'd be looking for the top 26 percentile, and that's not easy to find.
Yeah. Now we're having a very...
It's crazy, too.
Well, we're having a very appropriate index discussion. Let's take a look at the bond index, because
okay.
You raise a very important issue.
All right.
That I think is worthy of discussion here. One of the things I wanted to talk about today, actually, if you turn to, let me see, let's do this. Um,
Here we go. Page 37. One, this top right chart here is basically showing the quartile peer group rankings. And this is the, in red is the index. So we're pretending your bond index is an active manager and we're dropping it into the universe of active managers. So I think as we're all aware, historically, the bond index has outperformed a significant portion of the active managers. But what happened? During this period of time, the index dropped to below median, which means a more than half of the bond manager universe outperformed the index. And this is a this is that chunk of rolling 3 years advanced every quarter. And the point I want to make, this index performance is in stark contrast to the value index. And the whole point to make here is indexing also cycles in and out of favor,
right,
as a strategy. Right.
Right.
So it in our simple opinion, it would be likely that we are moving into an environment where if mean reversion always happens, right, in something that cycles, it's likely that we're moving into an environment that is more favorable for an active manager strategy, particularly in the value. So that index should start rolling out of favor with other active managers starting to emerge and perform positively. Now, I'm not speaking to Eaton Vance. For their sake, I hope they emerge and start outperforming. But we want to be careful because indexing cycles in and out of favor.
Didn't we have that conversation? I thought specifically about Eaton Vance because we were saying, where is Eaton Vance's market? Because they've been doing bad, the market's been changing. And I think we actually asked the question, well, are we about to enter Eaton Vance's market? You know, we've been fighting that headwind for so long.
Right.
You know, I mean, it's kind of now six, you know, enough quarters now, it's turned into, are we hoping for, you know, we're picking lottery numbers here, you know, or is it? But I think we were talking about that where we said, you know, they've been getting hit for so long. You know, the cycle's got to cycle sometime, and if we're entering that, I mean, I don't know what their market, you know, see what I'm saying? You know, are we entering the environment that these guys have been waiting for?
Yeah, I think the short answer, to the extent that we can guess,
right, yeah,
right, right, exactly. When we're going to shift gears, the next phase, whenever that shift right. happens, should be, you know, TASS's precedent, should be an environment that favors them. But the issue we have on the table here is, you know, again, we didn't want to, this manager was just brought in, there's an expense, although it is in a fund, so actually it's an easy in and out. But since this manager was just brought in, you know, should we look?
Well, yeah, all managers are going to underperform.
Right.
All managers are going to underperform at certain times, but how much underperformance can we stomach is the problem. Oh. And they have underperformed for six quarters straight.
Right, right.
And they're not just underperforming. They are significantly, when you're in the 99th percentile, yeah, 98th percentile,
a couple quarters is underperforming, six quarters is...
Right. If they were underperforming and they were still in the 60th percentile, you know, I would not have as much problem with them.
Yeah.
But when they're the worst of the worst.
Yeah. And when we look at this manager's general approach, quality and large cap, and compare them to other value managers, do a similar thing, or cast their line, same or similar areas. This one's struggling.
So it's not just that we're not in their market then, it's that they're just not doing it. That's what I'm asking, is that, you know, because the market's been kind of strange lately, so is it just they happen to be the lucky market that just, they're waiting for that push? I mean, if they're doing bad, they're doing bad. You know,
yeah, I think we would hope to see a little more stock picking prowess.
Right.
It's a
skill issue, not a bad market.
Even in a cold pump, we would expect them to
A little better. And like I said, even if they were in the 70th percentile, I could stomach that, you know.
Yeah, I mean, this is pretty significant on the performance.
Yeah, that's what I'm...
Can we talk about the cycle a little bit?
Sure.
I'm not quite sure I fully understand what you mean.
Well, let me try and explain it, and then you can go. What happens is when, like, growth is down, large cap growth is down, right?
Yeah.
Okay, it starts to take off again. So what happens typically is all the markets, growth is taken off, it's been down, it's been beaten down, it's been beaten down. Growth is the next, you know, growth is the next one that's going to significantly outperform. Everybody throws their money at growth, large cap growth, right? And they're not picky in where they're throwing it to. So they just throw it to any large cap growth manager, and that's what's called fluff. And so a lot of the companies that don't have real solid books and are not real strong companies, they get money thrown at them and they make money, you know, and their returns are really good. And then when the market goes down, all that fluff, all those bad companies that everybody threw money in are going to underperform, whereas the good managers, the good growth managers who pick the high-quality companies, they're going to underperform too, but not nearly as significantly is that in?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Okay, you might add anything to it?
Or I was just going to make a... draw my simple picture.
I think I've asked this question before. Maybe I'm just not getting it.
No, it's a fair question.
It's
and
a good
it's
question.
Something
that's,
that needs to be reviewed. I mean, if you know, our Morningstar style box, I mean, historically, and yeah, I've proved this out, a number of research firms have proved it out, there are economic reasons. If you think about the economic environment in a recession and who's likely to make money, and you know, the business operating environment, who in a recession, who's that more conducive to, and it's going to be more your defensive stocks, your utilities, consumer staples. Everybody's going to buy food and beer, right, in a recession,
P&G,
right? So then you come out of the recession, consumers start to re-lever, start borrowing again, start spending again. Okay, now maybe I'll buy that car. So now,
or that boat, now, four wheeler,
yeah,
more.
Or we'll go buy some jewelry. So now you're more cyclical companies start to come to play. And by the way, those happen to be smaller value type stocks. They fall in that those characteristics fall into a value index.
Mm-hmm.
And so early, and you can almost put a clock on here, early in the cycle, small value always up. This time was no different, even though it was a financial crisis. Small value leads out, then mid, and then quality starts to look good because this is overvalued. So then large value kicks in, and okay, now the economy's chugging along and growth stocks are performing well. Or the companies that happen to fall into the growth stock index are performing well. You got a good global economy cooking along, and you know, maybe your tech companies you know, start kicking in. So then the baton, performance baton, gets passed this way as the characteristics of the economic cycle change, and then of course you crash. And it's the only problem is we don't know how long each one of these
right.
chapters is.
Mm-hmm.
But it's just, it's amazing. It's the same, I mean, you can go back 60 years. It's the same every single cycle, same thing happens. You
okay.
just don't know the duration.
I understand.
So within that, each manager looks at certain characteristics. And just like this cycle, the market rewards certain characteristics sometimes, and sometimes it ignores it. So, well, we can't expect to have a manager to be on every single time. The market might be rewarding high quality, super earnings this quarter, and then, you know, 3 quarters ago, no one cared about earnings. They were just buying the stuff that they, the crap that they thought was going out of business, that is not going out of business. And we didn't pay this manager to buy or identify and buy those types of companies for us. So they're left out here. So their cycle off. So that's
kind of the practical application that's happened to Eaton Vance, which suggests, you know, a couple things. A, maybe that manager's performance cycle might be a little bit too limited in the scope. And B, when we look at them compared to other high-quality large cap managers that have legitimate headwind, they have a little bit more of a problem in performance than, you know, some of those other managers. I mean, we, okay, you underperform.
Yeah, like I said, we didn't, yeah. We're not.
Yeah, we can 2020 it, and okay, we understand. But this one was, this one's been lagging more than some of the others. So there's something in their process, their stock selection process, just has been more problematic than other managers to follow a similar game plan, game strategy. So, you know, when we brought in Dalton Griner, we were pretty excited, I think, because they looked like a decently all-weather, pretty long performance cycle manager, and they manage the cap space for us. If we are moving into a high-quality, large part of the cycle, if we're going to actually turn that page now, you know, Dalton Griner historically would be slowly selling off their small and moving into the large, so that, you know, they're still going to fill this box for us that Eaton Vance is exclusively fishing in. Because they too look for quality companies and good solid balance sheets. Because there's a certain quality, although they're not outright restrictive, but there's a certain quality element there. So if you are comfortable with the idea that, yeah, the value index has outperformed a ton of managers, but if, you know, the cycle for the index strategy is going to turn and become more favorable, which we think is the case, and obviously it's conjecture on our part, nobody knows, but we think you can make a case to, you know, keep your active manager on there. You still have that, keep that 1,000 index at the core, don't change that. But we think you have a better probability of staying with active, and, you know, maybe the move to do, not do a whole other manager search, but the move would be to move the funds over to Dalton Griner and consolidate and just have that one active manager.
Can I say just a couple things?
Sure.
I'm not on the board, but the Russell index value in a 10-year period would be 50% of the time would beat
right
everyone else. And instantaneously, you save what you would spend
because
on
the fees.
The
fees are
so in that $4 million portfolio, that's significant. And that's all I had to add.
I agree. I'm leaning toward the index just because of the how well the index is doing. And the other thing, too, is because it's an index, it's very easy to get in and it's very easy to get out. If 2, 3, 4, 5 quarters from now, the index is in the 80th and 90th percentile, at that point, and Dalton is still doing good, at that point, say, okay, let's throw it all in Dalton. But you guys on page 17, 16?
Yeah.
Okay, look at, we'll go to 17 for, we'll just look at the Wells Large Cap Growth and the Russell 1000 Growth Index in the blue there,
mm-hmm.
Second line down on the bottom page. Look at that 28, 34, 27, 22, 25, 20, all the way across since inception. They're in the top quartile, practically.
Mm-hmm.
Not quite, but...
almost.
And we're paying very few, yes, very little fees for that.
Mm-hmm.
And if you look up the next bottom of page 16, you look at the blue, the Russell 1000 Value Index,
mm-hmm.
It's looking pretty good, too.
Yeah, take a look at page 31 for that long-term picture. And here's the Wells Fargo Fund Growth, okay?
You can see that was, that had been average, with about half or maybe 40% of the manager universe outperforming it. And then lately, you know, that index, as you pointed out, you know, that's just a picture of it, has moved up to the top. And again, you know, I think it's a fair argument. That goes back to what we were talking about, you know, a couple of quarters or, you know, a couple of meetings. When all the stocks are moving all the same way, nothing's going to win but an index approach. And now markets, let's say, normalized more, volatility's come way down, and stocks are behaving differently now. So in that type of more normal operating environment, now your active manager should be able to operate with an advantage and give you that value add. So now the index ranking should roll down. But like I said, I mean, absolutely respect the history and you know, the preferences of this board. You know, we have no vested interest either way. We just want to help make the right decision and help substantiate the decision. Now, well, one thing though, if we did move back to the index,
right?
I would suggest that we utilize. Let me just get our total allocation up here.
Right, what page?
Page 11. The right-hand pie chart, or the actually the listing below, we should be careful of keeping a balanced growth value exposure. Okay, the Wells Fargo large cap growth, I mean, that's the index, but it's a growth index, okay? And Eaton Vance is a value manager, and we're trying to maintain a pretty equal distribution between growth and value. So I would suggest that we utilize the value index, or introduce, so we'd be introducing a new index fund, so we keep that place mark over in right. value.
Right.
Or alternatively, since we already have Dalton as a value manager over playing right. inside the field, so right. I can use a court analogy. Alternatively, we could go to the Russell 1000 index, which has no growth or value bias, and we're plugged in at the core, and we're always going to have that
right.
middle of the road index exposure. I think one of those two, if we were going to take an index route, would be preferred.
So otherwise, we're going to have a big core bias as opposed to the portfolio 1000 value.
Yeah, and then we're really going to be subject to, you know, market cycle over or under.
I don't have a problem with that, because that would give us a more 50-50 growth exposure, growth value.
Yeah, I mean, I'd recommend keeping that balance.
I think that sounds like a good idea.
And Wells Fargo does offer both benchmarks.
Right.
And, you know, again, as always, we move into a Wells Fargo as your custodian benchmark as an opportunity for fee offset for custodial services. So going back to the cost issue, if we're going to do that, let's extract the maximum
right.
cost savings from it.
Right. I mean, when they're performing, when the indexes are going that well, and like I said, it's indexed. If we're not happy with it 3 quarters from now, it's not hard to get out of it. It's not like we're right. buying a whole other active manager and having to sell out and buy and pay redemption fees and all that other stuff. It's just tell them sell one day and we got the money the next day.
Well, we're going to the same market in two different directions too. If we take all this money and give it to the same guy we're already using, if he just whiffs it for a quarter, I mean, because everybody messes up,
yeah.
then everything
right.
is,
right.
you know, and in
exactly
essence, really good diversification.
Putting all the eggs in the Dalton
nest. You know, I mean, everybody has a bad quarter. you know, at least, but, you know, hope, the index and somebody's having a bad quarter, then everybody's having a bad quarter.
Right.
That's just a bad market. But, I mean, because that's kind of what we're looking at now, is everybody's doing good except our guy. So, but yeah, my only question initially, which apparently not, is, you know, where they sit here coiled, ready to just slap one. You know, is it, you know, and that was, you know, because I think it's what we're talking about. Like, well, you know, everything's there, you know, but it's, you know, it's not. It's, they're just not doing it. So.
And my, which, you know, I'll raise my point again, you know, if they were in the 70th, 80th percentile,
yeah, no, you're right.
Handle that,
yeah.
You know, but being in the 99th percentile, I mean, they're the worst of
the worst. Yeah. And the spread is significant. It's not like they're the 99th percentile, but everybody's, you know, it's most of them are down here. It's,
right.
Yeah, there's a huge spread. So, yeah.
And they are a good company. They right. just, I mean, you've done some research on them, right, Dave? I mean,
oh, yeah.
And they are a good company. It's not that they're a bad company. They're just making some wrong decisions, you know. And we can handle it for a short time, but it's gotten to the point. Okay.
Somebody needs to make a motion.
No. Shall we discuss this more, or... Is everybody comfortable? Okay, I'd like to entertain a motion that we move the Eaton Vance portfolio into a Russell 1000 core index with Wells Fargo.
I'll make that motion.
Second.
Okay, motion by Jim, second by Estrada. If there's no opposition to a unanimous approval, seeing and hearing none, motion carries. Hope, if you ever have any questions, I know you're just listening, but if you ever have any questions, feel free to jump in and ask any questions. Or
okay.
Hope is kind of Alicia's backup.
Okay.
So she helps with some of the stuff. So.
Okay. Now, I believe as far as implementation goes, we can send out the communication for your acknowledgement.
Custodial manager.
And I believe we're looking at a monthly liquidity window. And
for Eaton Vance?
For Eaton Vance. I need to double check that, but I think
okay.
that's the case. So we would make this effective. And technically, I haven't looked at the contract, but technically, usually we have to give them 45 days notice. But more often than not, the managers are not going to hold us to that. Notification.
With the fund, I don't think so.
I'd be surprised if it wasn't in there.
Uh-huh.
You may be right.
Yeah, I'll look at the contract tomorrow. But we'll research it. And
yeah, that's kind of standard.
I would like to have it if they do it on a daily basis. I'd like it to happen tomorrow.
Okay. Well, let's do that.
If it's
as soon as they won't charge us.
You know, it's, as long as it's.
If it's a monthly thing, then we'll have to wait till the month, you know. But if they can do it on a daily basis, the quicker we get it out of there, the happier.
Yeah, let's not pay a fee, but let's, yeah. Okay, so we'll check that liquidity right away, and let's say we'll move as soon as possible. Typically, even if they have that language in the agreement, manager for relations sake is not going to hold our feet to the
right.
fire. They'll let us move out because
I'm sure we're not
going to look out down the road
and
maintain good relations. So.
And I think we've done our due diligence in holding on to them and holding on to them and giving them, you know. But
yeah, we did. We had the same conversation a couple of meetings ago.
Every single meeting, I think we have this conversation, and it's
okay.
All right.
We'll check on that and get that communication out. Let's see. While we're talking about cycling and indexing, let me just make the other point that I wanted to bring out. When we look at the total fund performance, and we'll go back up to manager topics. But let's go total fund growth, page 25. And a couple things, and again, I bring these out just as observations. You know, maybe these are things we want to do something about, but there's certainly things we need to be able to talk about.
Okay.
and know, you know, some of the dynamics going on behind the, or influences behind the scene here market-wise. First of all, on page 24, that right-hand cumulative performance chart, okay, that's if you gave me $100, what happened, as opposed to looking at percentages, because you can have a nice percentage, but actually end up with less than $100 if you lost $50 right out of the gate, right, because you didn't have as much money to work with. So that's another measure. And if you are heavily indexed,
yes,
you're always going to trail the passive benchmark, right, because you still have to take fees out, although they're the smallest fees out of the index, so you're always going to trail that. But in this case, you know, the Eaton Vance, unfortunately, the Eaton Vance issue has spread that gap a little bit. Now, the other point while we're on there looking at total plan is on page 25. And this isn't a, this is not a chart we want to see. The top right chart there shows the rolling performance of the plan relative to the benchmark and relative to the universe. And well, Eaton Vance has not helped this chart, okay? The reason the program is bouncing now in that not so pretty quartile, I mean, we have what we've maxed out our equity, right? That's been a good thing. We have not rebalanced until we hit the outer bounds, so that's been the right thing to do. We've shifted recently, but we've shifted money from domestic bonds into global bonds. We've shifted funds. Good afternoon.
Hi.
Talking about total program. Step back and take a snapshot here of some observation on page 25, and we're talking about why the program in the blue squares has been. We just went through the performance relative to the benchmark, and a decision has been made to move on from Eaton Vance, who's been the primary detractor. So now we're looking at the program universe ranking, skipping along the bottom. We don't want to see that. Now, where are most of the fund assets? In the bond index fund, right? All right. Well, as we were talking about before, with, you know, 35-40% of your assets in the bond index fund, that page back up. On page 37. Well, what happened to your manager, i.e. your index fund? Your index fund performance dropped into the 75th percentile. So you had about 40% of your assets effectively in a manager. It finished in the bottom 75th percentile because it was an index fund. So when we do the math and look at the total plan, that actually was the most significant peer group detractor, was actually being indexed. Which normally, normal horizon, that would be, you know, that's fine. Low fee, and historically, the bond index fund has outperformed 80%. The fixed income manager universe, but for this particular period of time, active management just blew away. And actually, we've seen a lot of managers that get doubles to the benchmark. And again, when you do the math, 40% of your assets with a 75th percentile manager, all of a sudden your total plan relative performance comes down. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
I just want to make sure everyone's aware. You know, my gosh, look at this quartile ranking of this program.
On this 37, okay, the 0, 0, and the ranking, so the total domestic equity, so the ranking, so you want your numbers higher, you want to be higher on the chart rather than lower?
Yeah, you want to be above the...
Above the red dot.
Above the red dot, and you want to be in the lighter shade.
Okay.
Top of the order there.
Right.
And, yeah, that's where bond indexing ended up.
Well, what we did, this was just before you came on the board, we had Aberdeen, which was Deutsche Asset Management. We had them as our fixed income manager, and for 10 years they were, you know, that's one, we didn't even have to look at that manager because every single quarter, it was usually small, but every single quarter they outperformed.
Right.
And then when all the bottom fell out, they didn't do a little bad, they did a lot bad.
Right.
Really, really bad. So we just, we yanked it and threw it into the index overnight, basically.
Yeah. And again, my purpose here, I'm not in any way, shape, or form suggesting that was a bad decision. That was always a correct decision.
Right.
And I can fully support utilization of indexing as a product.
Yeah.
Low cost, but as the cycle went, for this period of time,
right.
You just need to know that's the way it worked out for this period,
right.
That bond indexing was a bottom 90th percentile manager, and with 40% of the assets there, that's what hurt the plan. I'm not suggesting in any way, shape, or form that was a bad decision.
Right.
I think it's a good decision.
Right.
But that's where the number shook out. So when I see the peer group ranking, you're like, hey, well, we had our bond portfolio indexed. Indexing finished in the top bottom 90th percentile. Mm-hmm. So of course, when you do the math, that's kind of...
And we have active management now, right, with those two bond managers that we've...
Yeah, now we have added active management in that area,
right,
where we think there's a probability of getting good active return in that plus space, and we're leaving the domestic core fixed income index as it is in because
I don't even mind if the index is going to remain in the bottom quartile. I wouldn't even mind putting that into more active management. You know, if we'll see how these two managers we've got, these two fixed income managers do.
Yep.
I wouldn't even mind taking that index and splitting it between those two. We're adding another, you know, depending on whether you need and you feel we need another style or another.
I would like to. We are moving. We've got a plan in place to move. There will be more money coming out of fixed income, going into real estate as the capital call comes in. We pulled money out of this fund to go into the two global bond funds. I think it would make sense if everyone was comfortable to move some additional money over to the global bond funds over time. But right now, let's get comfortable, you know, with the allocation, and let's let those capital calls come in.
That's where we would get the money from
already.
Okay,
yeah,
that makes sense. One other question that I ask about every meeting and tips, are we and when?
One of the items, I'd like to maybe run the meter a little bit next meeting, would be to talk about some tips.
Tips are treasury inflation protected securities, and the reason we have 5%, we would like 5% of our fund to be in tips, because what happens is if inflation takes off, these tips, these treasury inflation protected securities, do quite well, whereas our normal fixed income is not going to do well when inflation goes up, funds go down. So we want, you know, who knows if inflation is ever going to happen or not. You know, everybody's projecting it, but it hasn't happened yet. So at some point, we need to probably position ourselves.
You've had groceries this week?
Gas?
Right.
It's cool. I think it's ready to go. It's just, and we are happening. We just haven't named it yet.
Yeah, we're absolutely advocates of tips.
the issue we had was the tips became so overvalued.
Yes.
You actually had a negative yield, and what you give up in return for inflation is you only get a fractional coupon compared to a non-tip bond. So there's a big income kid. Agree in the allocation. Got to have something in there. What I'd like to run the meter on a little bit maybe next time is we've been reviewing some, let's call them inflation tips, inflation alternative products, which in one case, one of the products we haven't fully approved it yet, but so don't take this as a recommendation, but one of the very interesting products is actually an Eaton Vance.
Eaton Vance has some.
Okay.
Yeah.
You've got a very strong fixed income shop. And essentially what they're doing, now I don't want to keep this simple. Your biggest problem when interest rates go up, right, your bond price goes down. 30-year bond goes way down in price, whereas a one-year bond goes down a little bit in price. So they're keeping the interest rate sensitivity very short. Okay. Second thing they're doing, okay, you buy tips, you got no yield, no coupon. So the portfolio is going to be, the baseline of the portfolio is actually going to be what are called banknotes. And banknotes are like direct issue loans, they're loan pools, or issued by banks, are all very high quality. That gets the yield up. And then what they do is they do this pretty fancy swap overlay to neutralize the impact of inflation, and then they put the tips in there so that the only thing that the tip does is actually give you, when inflation goes up, catch that adjustment. But if the bond price goes down, they've done this fancy swap so that it takes away most of the downside that you would experience from the tip. I tried to keep it as simple. It's a very interesting strategy, and I just put it together. But it's that kind of thing, I think, that might be interesting to look at.
Okay.
So we can keep our return up while addressing the tips at the same time. And again, Eaton Vance just happened to have one that...
Like I said, Eaton Vance is a good company. It's a strong company, you know. But this product that we have is just not doing well. But it's not reflective of the entire company. I think they've got some international stuff that's going quite well.
Yeah, they do. Yeah, they're a good shop. Yeah, and candidly, I mean, our only issue, the only thing that's giving us pause, we love the strategy, right now is the fee. And we're viewing that fee as maybe average to above average, and obviously we're trying to bring in fees that are average to below average.
Well, you know, and a lot of times with as many clients as you have, they will sometimes make exceptions for all your clients.
Yeah, and we have the asset size here that we could do a separately managed situation. We're reviewing a institutional share class fund, essentially a mutual fund.
Right.
And they can't cut, SEC won't let them give you a fee break on a mutual fund.
Right.
It is what it is. You can't do anything about that. Now, we can get the same strategy separately managed, in which case, then now we have the opportunity to maybe do something on the fee. So we're kind of at the fee workout phase on that before we are comfortable bringing it forward. But anyway, I'll add a couple of interesting products like that that we can look at too at the next meeting. Okay, so that was the main, as far as the program total status, just, you know, sitting back, taking a look, you know, where are we? Where are we compared to our peers? You know, the two things that stand out, first of all, is the index. Your bond index manager finished in the 90th percentile, and that really pulled total program down. And the second was, unfortunately, the equity performance of Eaton Vance. From allocation size, we've been on it. And I think the changes that are being made on the margin with the real estate and with the global bond have already helped out of the gate and should continue to help going forward. And some good decisions, and we'll have those capital calls come in. I guess those are really the main points I wanted to bring out. We covered cash flow, we covered returns. So at the risk of running the meter at this meeting, I mean, your international equity is, you know, that's performing well. You know, everything else is coming together. Your real estate, you had, oh, yeah, let's talk about that. Mm-hmm. No, let's leave with that. Your real estate funding, great timing on that. We've got our first, back up to the front numbers there for that. Let's see, page 23. On page 23, there's the real estate allocation. We, you know, as we talked about, we'll continue to participate in the Invesco REIT, publicly traded equity real estate, and while that's lagged the benchmark, as a investment, that general area continues to do well. And that's, we're keeping that as our place marker, letting that run, and then ultimately, obviously, we're funding our core, more stable real estate investments with that. The American Core Realty, we didn't have their number under this print, but they were basically up right around 4%. And when we consider that the bond portfolio was basically flat, and that's our source of funds, you know, right out of the gate, you know, that's a positive there. So we think the real estate move, we're going in the right direction. I just hope these capital calls don't take too long so we can get positioned. So, and the bond funds, the global bond funds were up in a period of time, you know, up about 1.5% during the quarter. We're not showing the numbers there because we invested them during the quarter. They were up when the domestic bond market was, you know, flat or for the period that was down. So out of the gate, those things are working, you know, just adding a little bit at a time. So.
Now, even though they're not in these numbers here, does it still reflect in our total gains for the fund? The numbers at the beginning.
Yeah, let's go to page...
You see what I'm saying? I mean, it's just because it's not... You know, is it still, like, if we look, because, you know, we're up, what were we up, 10%?
Yeah, we funded those, let's see, I put that order in as soon as we could.
What page are you on?
With the policy, so page 18.
Okay, thank you.
So, if lower section of page 18, there's the PIMCO Diversified Income and the Templeton Global Bond. Mm-hmm. All the way over to the right, those were officially funded March 1st.
Okay, I got you.
As of this print, we only had them for one quarter, and yes, they would be reflected in the total asset.
Okay, so then the total asset's still going to be accurate. It's not going to be,
yeah,
notwithstanding these numbers. Okay.
Yes, fair question.
Okay. Just to make sure we're displaying that we're doing as well as we are, just in case that comes up in a meeting.
Yeah, and then here's an update for April through April 28th, and that obviously the assets are fully reflected in that one. So we did calculated the 5% and moved the funds over. Those were the main issues to cover, and I think you asked the great leading questions where I wanted to go anyway on the inflation products, and yeah, something we can address at the next regular meeting.
Okay. I am going to need to get for our annual report, state report, I need to get the addresses and the names of the people at PEMCO and Templeton. I'll get with you later on.
Okay.
Yeah, every year we need to send those.
I have Templeton.
She has most of them.
I don't know if I have PEMCO anymore.
You should have PEMCO as well.
Okay.
Alicia's got those.
Oh, yeah.
But I don't know if it's the same, these, for these particular funds. It might be different for these particular funds.
I'll check, see what it is and make sure you both get it.
At least the contact person and the phone number might be different.
Yeah, and you probably want to pursue it electronically, preferably anyway, right?
Yes.
Let me get you the current contact.
Yes, Templeton, definitely, I can get online and get statements.
Templeton, but that's the Templeton Foreign that is the general employees have, that's Equities. And this is fixed income, it's a whole different product, I don't know.
Different product, the same company, right?
There's Franklin Templeton, then there's Templeton, is this the ones out of Fort Lauderdale?
It's the same greater entity, yeah.
Okay, all right.
Yeah, if not, I'll feed your Wells and I should be able to get statements through Wells.
Okay.
That was all I had.
Okay. All right, I think we made some good moves today. I think, and we'll just keep, like I said, we'll keep an eye on that. If the index, you know, starts to go into the lower percentile, then we can always throw it into Dalton or something else. But it's just hard to look at those numbers and not, and especially with the ease of everything, you know, being in an index fund, we can pull it out in a day. Then,
how much would we lose if we pull it out right now?
As far as they realized, trying to find that cost basis.
I think you're still ahead of the game, but it's affected, right?
Yeah. See, that was funded and lost more than unrealized gains. Hang on, I'll get that page in here. If you turn to page 29, our December 08.
It's the same thing.
I think it was funded January of, we had it funded January of 09, December 08. So we've got a, if you go to that growth of the dollar chart in the right hand section there.
Yeah.
You're not selling at on an absolute basis. You are taking a gain. So the question is the relative amount that you're realizing. So that would be 147 versus 133. So we're going to cut our losses relative to the index, and that would be what is potentially being left on the table.
Okay.
29.
Okay.
Assuming, you know, the manager was going to close the gap in the future, not fund in the future. So that's a relative underperformance we're realizing, but on an absolute basis, mm-hmm. you know, you're taking a gain.
We're not selling at a loss. We're just picking a better team.
Right. And it'll be a simultaneous, you know, directed in such a way that when the fund is sold, Wells is simultaneously purchasing the index fund, so you're out of market time. Will be, you know, today. Yeah.
I have some questions on page 14. This thing appears to indicate that we had a distribution of like $483,000.
Yes, sir.
and apparently they net out this income figure, because I come up with $803,000, and they come up with $101,000. So it must be after distribution, is that correct?
Actually, the income number would represent coupons and dividends paid only.
Yeah. But those figures don't add up, is what I'm telling you.
So we're saying contributions, we got net contributions.
Well, just take your income fund and just add it up, and you come up with $236,000. And if you throw in the contribution of $593,000, you come up with $803,000. So I'm a little confused on this statement.
Okay, I'd have to get my calculator out, but I mean, the way it should work, if you're suggesting it's not working, I'll get it checked, but
yeah.
This system generated, the way it should work is the opening market plus contributions, minus distributions, minus fees.
Okay,
minus
so expenses. It's net is what it is.
Sure.
It's net income, it's not gross income.
Correct.
Okay.
Plus income, plus appreciation, should net out to that 32,217.
Okay. I apologize for being late. I guess I misread the time on this thing. I got some questions on these expense items that were sent to us. This February through April, that's a quarter?
Yes.
Those are the monthly payouts, I think.
Well, actually, that should be quarter.
Our last
meeting should be January through April.
Well, oh, no. We had a meeting in February, so it covered everything up until February 2nd's meeting. And then this is covering everything from the last meeting to this meeting. Because we don't meet
exactly
on a quarter basis. So it's everything from the last meeting.
Okay.
So in other words, if I get a bill in the mail today, I'll sign it, sign it and send it to Alicia, but it'll get
We'll get
approved at our next quarterly meeting.
You may have already gone through this, but we had some legal services for something. What was that all about?
Receipt and review Division of Retirement pending legislation. Review legislative packet and Division of Retirement materials. It's the Klausner bill is right there.
Okay.
Review fire chief employment issues. The when we lost our fire, when our fire chief left, they were going to pay him for an extended period, and they wanted to know if we could do that legally. And so Alicia called me and asked me, "Can we do it?" And I said, "I don't know. I better call the lawyer. You know, okay. I'm not going to make that decision." So we got a legal opinion, and he said he advised us on what we should do.
How many fund managers do we have? Is it just this guy Bogdan, or does everybody manage their own? Or how does that work?
Oh no, Bogdan's not a manager. This is Bogdan. He's the consultant.
Okay.
And then the managers are right here on the thing.
12? Yeah, and they're net. We don't actually pay, right?
There's a couple that we do pay invoices for.
Okay. Yeah. Dalton would send
I'm just curious what we're paying all these people. This Bogdan, is that a quarterly fee?
Correct.
Are we paying him $25,000 a year?
Correct.
Yeah, on page 11. That gives you all your managers. And any of the mutual funds, as was pointed out, would be mutual funds are reported net. of those fees would be coming out of the investment itself.
Who is Stanley Holcomb?
That's our actuary.
Actuary. Is that an annual fee also, or?
No, that's core,
That's got the valuation on it.
That's got the actuarial valuation. So he, the actuary, when he comes and presents the actuarial valuation,
so that's a one-time.
That's his biggest bill of the year, and then we all use him all year long for other, for to do final calculations and stuff like that. So.
And this guy Stanley Holcomb, where is he on there?
He's not on there. He's not a manager.
Who is that?
He's not on this report at all.
He's an actuary.
He's our actuary.
The report that you're looking at?
Oh, well, what?
He's looking at this report.
Okay.
The report that you're looking at here is just items that I paid by check out of the account. They don't match up with the items that are in Dave's book.
Okay.
Is that what you were trying to get to?
Yeah, I'm just trying to figure out who all these people are.
Okay.
Who is DGHM?
That's one of our managers, money managers. That's our all cap value manager.
And the admin expenses, what are those?
That is Alicia.
And Hope.
And Hope.
They're not paid by the
city, no.
City?
We pay them.
Okay, getting well,
we
down to
we share that. We share their expense with the general board and the police board.
Right.
Oh, okay.
And that's all agreed upon.
Yeah.
Right. Once a year.
Right.
But this monthly pension payout, understand that. I'm a little confused about the drop payout. The drop comes out of the pension plan?
Yes.
Oh, wait a minute. If somebody gets in the drop, they're drawing their regular retirement. Starting at that date.
They're not drawing it. The money stays in the plan.
You pay interest on it.
Yeah, and they're paid interest on it. The money stays in the plan, and...
Well, where do they get their income?
I'm sorry?
Where do they get their income?
They're still working
they
for the city.
Working. Work for the city, so they're drawing the income. That was my point.
Yes. Okay. They're getting the income. For all pension purposes, they're retired.
Okay.
So we calculate their final benefit.
Okay.
And then we, on paper, we keep track of them separately, and their money plus interest goes into their drop account, but it's only on paper. We're not actually taking money out on paper, but the money stays in the plan and stays invested with all the other money.
Mm-hmm.
And then when they leave the drop, when they actually physically leave employment, then however much is in their drop account, we will cut them a check for it.
Mm-hmm. Sounds like in Tallahassee you're trying to do away with it.
They didn't do away with
they
it.
They didn't?
No.
Okay. What I'm trying to determine here, are we bringing the money we're spending? And it's sort of hard to tell from this thing right here without going to this. But...
Well, we started this quarter with $30 million.
Yeah.
And we ended the quarter with $32
million. All right. But how much of that quarter was income? But in other words, are we covering all these expenses?
Yes, we are.
Yes.
In fact, there's $100,000 plus.
All right. That was that figure on page 14 to talk about. Okay.
And then... Actually, it's $1 million plus, right?
Yes.
There was an actual, yeah.
Well, that includes the appreciation and everything. Okay.
Right. Yeah, the plan's cash flow positive. Your contributions exceed your pension distributions by about $100,000.
Okay. If you had to round that into a percentage of return on an investment, what would it be? The gross.
Not sure income. I understand.
The gross income as opposed to the total investment is about what percent?
Oh, that would be the 101,048.
No, that's net.
That should be a gross, that's a paid out
discounting all expenses, what are we earning on this money is what I'm trying to get to.
Net, I can tell you what, yeah, I can tell you what you're earning.
On $30 million, you're earning 1.1.
Net of investment expenses. Okay, I don't have the calculation that I've been administrative and actuarial, but tracking net of investment expenses, you're at, for the quarter, on page 15, you're at 4.09%. And on a fiscal year to date, 10.84.
What is the minimum we have to earn to cover all of our expenses?
Well, that would be the...
Yeah, he doesn't know that's more on the city side.
And that varies from month to quarter.
Yeah. Right. I mean, if somebody goes out of the drop this quarter and we have to cut them a $200,000 check, then... Yeah. That's going to significantly skew the numbers in this quarter.
Okay.
Long term, our percentage return is
like the actuary report came in this quarter. So that would be the number that we're not going to get that $16,000 bill. Right, yeah. So there's a lot of variables.
Hmm. And if you're looking for a benchmark of performance, I mean, we look for an 8% return.
Right.
Is what we look for.
Okay.
And we made 10. So, yes, we were positive.
And from a cash flow standpoint,
just kidding.
There's sufficient cash flow, so there's no need to sell investments.
Do I come on?
Yeah. All right, Don.
Any cash flow?
Sad faces on this paper.
Where did everybody go traveling to?
Fort Lauderdale. There was a conference down in Fort Lauderdale. Yeah.
What happened to that thing out in Tallahassee you were talking
it's
about?
It's coming up. That's what it's on. I'm bringing that up as soon as we do you have any more questions or would you like more clarification?
I got an overall comment. I've been looking real carefully at this whole plan and two things jump at me. One is we appear to not have an awful lot of spread of risk for a $30 million pension plan. We also seem to have an awful lot of money managers.
That's actually opposite, because
yeah.
you spread the risk out by diversifying.
I understand that. I just don't think we've got enough diversification in here. But anyway, that's just my opinion. As I understand this whole thing, we have three charges here. One is to make sure there's enough money in this plan to perform with the pension plan, to pay out.
Correct.
Other is that we receive a reasonable rate of return to generate these monies.
Correct.
And last is a fiduciary responsibility that we'd be in charge of the responsibility of making sure all this happens. And
correct.
A fiduciary definition is the highest degree of care over money, not just guesstimates, but I mean the very highest degree of care, and we can be held to that. What I would like to see is an institutional investor, such as one of the big stock brokerage firms, come in here and take a close look at what we're doing. And maybe we're doing great, and maybe we're not. And see what they can come up with. It wouldn't cost us a thing, but some time for somebody to sit down with them and go over all of our facts and figures. But I think we owe it to the pension recipients, and we owe it to ourselves, too, to be really careful with this. $30 million is a lot of money.
Just curious if you feel that there's excessive risk in the plan and it's insufficiently diversified, where do you feel the deficiency is?
I'd have to sit down with you on that one.
I think you'd have to sit down with all of us on that one.
Yeah, I mean,
I think you'd have to sit down with all of us on that one.
Yeah. Okay.
And you know, we're not opposed to that, you know, we can, especially on a meeting, you know, if we have like another meeting where there's no money managers or any big, long agenda, then we can sit down and, you know, just write up a whole outline or whatever on everything you want to discuss, and, you know, because we may learn something out of it, you know, so.
End of sermon.
I'm sorry?
End of sermon.
That's okay, no, that's, you're right, I mean, you, all your questions are very legitimate and right and everything, but we can certainly sit down and discuss if you think there are better, ways we can, you know, increase our returns without increasing the risk too much.
Yeah.
I mean, we do have to, with risk comes, you know, a lot of people say, oh, we can make 8.5, no problem, we'll just add more risk. Well, that adding more risk means also you may lose.
Yeah, that's true.
Doesn't mean you're going to gain just because you add risk.
I just came back from 3 weeks in China, and I observed some things over there that absolutely blew my mind.
Yeah.
They've got an inflation rate that's going, getting ready to go right through the roof. To give you an example, condos sell for $450 a square foot.
Yeah.
And they're totally empty.
Mm-hmm.
They don't have anything in them. They don't have furniture in them. They don't have kitchens in them. They don't have bathrooms in them. That's totally empty. And there are billions of them.
And they're buying because that's they're going to have a real estate bubble just like we had. And they're trying to put caps on it over there where you can only buy one, you know, the maximum of two pieces of property, you know, because the government can just impose whatever they want because they're not a democracy. The government says this and it's this, like it or not. So,
and you don't want to get pregnant the second time. It's a mandatory abortion.
Right.
By the state.
Well, that's been for 20 years or more.
Interesting.
Yeah.
But I've never seen so many high-rise buildings in my life.
Yeah, and everybody says China's going to take us over. They're going to take us over. They've got more problems than...
Oh, yeah. They sure do.
Yeah. Okay. Other general business. One thing we did talk about, I don't know if I brought it back up, but about the guy that bought back time but didn't buy enough. He hadn't paid, the calculation was done wrong and everything. I went to him. He said, okay, how much do you need? And I told him the difference. He paid the difference and everything's fine.
Good.
So I just want, I don't know if I revisited that or not, but I wanted to. And he paid the difference in the calculation and he was okay with it. The other thing is school. There is a school in Tallahassee coming up on the 16th, 17th, 18th?
Yes.
Okay. Who would like to attend that school? It's in Tallahassee. It's a Monday, Tuesday, and Wednesday, this May 16, 17, and 18. It's put on by the Division of Retirement, and it's a very good school. It's
what's it going to cover?
They're going to cover your fiduciary responsibility. Day number one, Monday, is for new trustees. That'd be a good one for you. You go and you learn all your fiduciary responsibility and like these questions you were having, who was the actuary, what did the actuary do, and who was the auditor, who was this, and why do we have that. They kind of explain the basics of being a trustee. And that's on Monday. It's usually from about 9 to 4 or something like that. And then for Tuesday and Wednesday, Tuesday's a full day, and then Wednesday usually you get out of there about lunchtime-ish. And they have money managers come and speak. They have actuaries come and speak about actuarial issues. They have consultants come and speak. And there's going to be a lot of discussion in reference to all the new legislation that will have passed or not passed, because as I understand it, Friday is the end of the legislative session, and we will know Friday exactly what is going to go through and what is not going to go through. So there will be a lot of discussion about that.
Oh.
And even after the legislative session ends, we don't know what happens to bills that go before or in the queue to the governor's office. Anything can happen between the queue, in that queue to the governor's office.
In other words, he has the opportunity to veto anything, but he can't add anything to it. He only has veto power.
Right.
Well, yeah.
The board has line item veto too, right? So that's...
I don't know if he has a line item veto. He has to veto the whole bill. I don't know.
So there are things that can happen.
There are things that pop, but knowing the makeup of the legislature, the current legislature, and knowing the governor, if anything, he would be adding stuff, and he can't do that. So I don't see him vetoing any, this is just my opinion, I'm not saying what's going to happen, but I don't see him vetoing any of it, because they're reducing benefits pretty...
I'll check my calendar, but I think I can go, but I need to check it first.
All right, check, so we can go ahead and get you registered. We went ahead and reserved some rooms, but we're going to cancel it. I told Alicia to go ahead and reserve the rooms, and then we'll find out who's going and who's not going, but we need to know as soon as possible.
Okay, I'll call you today.
Okay, give me a call today, and then we'll either cancel the hotel room or keep it according to who wants to attend. Do you know if you're going to be able to attend?
Wedding anniversary and daughter's birthday in the middle of it, can't do it.
Okay. The other thing, too, is Tallahassee puts this school on for the last 20 years. I've been going. They do the one in Tallahassee in the spring, in April or May, March, April, May, and then they do another one down in Central Florida somewhere, usually Orlando, but sometimes it's been in Clearwater. But in the central part of the state, they do it every fall. What they've done, what the budget cuts and everything, what the governor's done, as I understand it, and this may change, but as I understand it, the governor said, no, you can't educate your trustees. It costs too much money to educate your trustees, so you're only going to be able to do one school a year. So they have taken that one and combined and axed the fall school totally, and they're only going to have the one school up in Tallahassee now every year, as opposed to the one in Tallahassee in the spring and the one in Central Florida in the fall. Is that how you understand it, Dave?
That's, which is better than it was, because Dr. Shoemaker did not have a budget.
She did not have a budget.
In the beginning of the year.
Right.
As if...
Yeah, they wanted to cancel this one in Tallahassee, too. Yeah. Yeah, they're...
On the paperwork that I got for the agenda, it says there will not be a fall class.
That's what I read, too. But even last year when they had it in the fall, you know, I was calling Tallahassee, and I said, are you having it? Are you having it? And she's like, we don't know yet. We don't know yet. They didn't even give them the okay until... 2 weeks before they allowed them to have it, and there's a chance that they may allow it again, but I doubt it. They're saying, and even though it's all printed all over the thing in bold letters, this is your only chance. So it's highly unlikely that they'll.
So not even next year.
Depends. Like he said, she had no budget this year, and the thing is, it doesn't cost anything. I mean, it costs. I mean, we pay $300. I think it's like $300 or $400 a person.
I'm not sure how much registration is this year, but it was like $300 to go all 3 days. It was $100 a day.
Right.
If you go 2 days, it's $200 a day. It's $100.
And you get a big binder with all the state laws and all, you know, you get, and so that money, that $300, and they give you lunch 2 days and snacks and all that stuff during the meetings, you know, so it's not a big cost factor for, you know. And everybody pays for their own hotel rooms and everything, so it's not a huge cost factor, but I know what's going on. We all know what's going on. The governor doesn't want any pension plan. But, okay, the Schultz, Tallahassee.
And you're going to go before it counts tomorrow night?
Am I?
Yes.
I can be there.
Okay.
I've got 2 hours. I'm on duty, but...
Tomorrow?
Yeah.
Yeah, we're...
It is scheduled for early, for around 4 o'clock, yeah.
Okay.
Then the presentation part, not later, right. Under the city manager.
All right. Now, am I doing the presentation, or am I just there to ask questions?
Nope, you're doing your presentation.
Okay. All right.
I just brought that up because I'm going to make sure.
Okay.
What time is this meeting tomorrow? What time is this meeting tomorrow?
It's council meeting, city council, regular city council meeting. It starts at 4, and we're early on the agenda, so.
And it can go to 10, but,
you know, I don't know what they at home.
Yeah, we got moved to under the city manager's report, and they kindly move us back to the presentation part.
Okay. Again, with the new legislation, we'll know soon. It doesn't look like it's going to be as bad as it initially looked, but we'll find out. Do you have anything, Dave, that anything more?
Yeah, it looked like the only changes were going to affect, the biggest changes were, I think overtime was going to be limited to 300 hours. Mm-hmm. I mean, I guess just one observation, maybe to your point, the House bill and the Senate bill
are very much different.
Very different, and from the updates I've received so far,
there's not much.
I mean, one
coming together.
Possible outcome is they're so far apart,
right.
It goes away.
That's what I think is going to happen, but that's just me.
And most of the changes I've heard are specific to FRS, not necessarily.
FRS is really the main.
Yeah, FRS.
They're going to have a contribution.
Right. Now, Mike. Question on that. I guess I'll ask in Tallahassee, but that may not, maybe you know. They're talking about they're going to start charging the state employees 3% of their.
Right now, yeah, but there's been some discussion about 5% too, and there's no agreement.
Right. Now, is that money mandatory go to pay down the unfunded liability, or are they going to put that in the general budget and use it for tax breaks for multi-billionaires?
Can you answer that question?
My impression of it specifically to
offer. Can I make a political statement?
Yeah.
But I mean, so we have to put less into. It would be like us paying 12%, so the city doesn't have to pay. You know, is what it sounds like to me. Everything I've read is that's what it is.
It's 3% to pay.
Yeah, it's just a cost offset to the state.
It's not paying unfunded liabilities.
Right.
It's a cost. Yeah, it's a cost offset. What's the date they're going to be talking about legislation up in Tallahassee? On Tuesday the 17th, probably.
I gave the agenda to.
Is it possible just to go one day?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah,
I'd like to go one day.
And that's the second day, right?
What? I'm sorry?
I think that's the second day.
Oh, the second day.
So the conference is for everybody. I think the first day is more for
first day is
first
for new beginners. The second and third day are both for that's one thing you might if you want to stay one night and then go because the next the Wednesday it ends around lunchtime.
I think that's what I'd like to do.
Go Tuesday, stay Tuesday night, and then
go
come
up
back
early
Wednesday.
Tuesday morning. I'll like just drive up early Tuesday morning and then
stay Tuesday night
and come back on Wednesday.
Yeah. Okay, and we can look at the agenda to see what's happening on Wednesday if you wanted to.
Back to legislation, is there anything specific to us everything I hear is FRS, FRS this, FRS that. I haven't heard anything
there's a Senate bill and there's a House bill and they're so far apart that it doesn't look like there's and they can't send two bills.
I understand the process. I just haven't heard any specific proposals specific to us. Everything I've heard is FRS, which doesn't.
There are specific.
Right. And that's what I'm asking. What are they saying for us now?
I think
the overlapping ones were the limits on overtime, the 300 hour.
And that's for us.
Yes.
Right.
Yeah. And then I think the other common overlapping item pertained to your state money balances.
Right.
And it looks like those would be available.
Right.
To
the city to pay down
the unfunded obligation.
Yeah. So.
And then I also heard there's a 50-50 split on that.
Yes, that's what I've heard too. That's what I've read. And then the other thing I've read is that the insurance premium tax proceeds, only a portion of those can be used to fund new benefits. And the other portion has to be deposited into the unfunded obligation.
Right. I think that's the 50-50
okay.
split.
Yeah.
50% of it will have to go to pay down the unfunded liability, and then 50% of it will be able to use for new benefit. And that's, we're up and we're in negotiations now, so by the time the legislation is final, we'll know what we're going to be able to negotiate with, or what the union will be able to negotiate with.
So I guess they had negotiations the other day, and they just kind of tabled everything, so I think...
Yeah, I was here.
I think everybody, you're here for, okay, I think everybody's just sitting and waiting for Tallahassee.
Yeah. Yeah, that appears to be what happened, because there wasn't much negotiating going on last negotiation.
They're just sitting on...
Okay, anybody else have anything they would like to...
I saw something on some kind of trip to Newport, Rhode Island. What was that all about?
We get stuff all the time from all different from all these different organizations all over the country, all over the world. They have them for Euro money, has them in Sweden and all over the place, but and they have them in Boston and, you know, but we have the FPPTA, which David teaches at a lot, and we have this school in Tallahassee, and we have Klausner Conference. Our lawyer puts on a conference in Fort Lauderdale every year. So we, as a board, we kind of made a decision to stay in Florida because of the there are plenty of very, very excellent schools
here. Does the business school run the course?
I'm sorry?
Does the business school run the course at FSU?
No, I don't. It's right? Something with FSU because the meeting is held in the FSU big auditorium.
They have one of the finest business schools in the whole country. Their graduates, about 95% of them, are finding jobs.
Yeah.
Which is amazing.
Right. I think it's put on by the Division of Retirement. I don't know how much the business school in conjunction. It might be in conjunction with the business school or something. Mm-hmm. I'm not sure on that.
Yeah, Orlando's just pure. Everything said Division of Retirement in Orlando when we went to the same school. Nothing said Forest State or anything like that. It was all
right.
All the paperwork was Division of Retirement.
But that's the one in Orlando. The one in Tallahassee always has FSU all over.
That's
okay. Any more questions, concerns, issues? Okay. With that, the meeting is adjourned at 2:47.